I'm David Schreiner Kahn, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep people stuck. Today, I'm pleased to welcome Jen Beagle. Jen is a digital marketing director with a history of developing robust marketing solutions for blue chip brands, entertainment properties, and technology startups. Her previous clients include Current TV, Umami TV, Verizon Fios, Toyota, A&E, Universal Studios, and Lionsgate. In 2010, Jen co-founded the New York chapter of StoryCode, a not-for-profit cross-platform incubator. Recently, Jen partnered with Story Forward, an LA-based organization dedicated to exploring the future of storytelling and entertainment. Jen is also an adjunct professor in the New Media Department at Concordia College in Bronxville, New York, where she teaches digital marketing. Jen, welcome to the show. It's great to have you on.
Thank you, David.
I wondered if we could start off by you talking a little bit about your background and how and why you ended up in your current business doing what you're currently doing.
Well, that's a long story, but I'll make it short. I actually started out I went to undergrad for film school, and I've always been a storyteller. Ever since I was a kid, I loved to write and read and tell stories. In film school, I learned how to tell stories through visual medium. And after film school, I got out and had no job. So I ended up working in offices for a few years, office manager, administrative assistant, learning how businesses run. And then I went back to grad school, and I decided to go for media because I wanted to hone my media skills, brush up on my editing skills, brush up on digital design. And while I was there, I started learning about digital marketing. My year I graduated, I got the position of working on a transmedia project called Zenith, and I was brought on board as the transmedia producer. And for that, I taught myself how to use social media for marketing purposes and telling a story to a larger audience. The film itself had very limited marketing budget, so we decided to use social media. At the time, it was generally free, to expand the story. And in doing so, we amassed a pretty large audience for this tiny little film nobody knew about. And kind of the rest, as they say, is history. I got hooked and then started working at a boutique agency and started teaching myself all about social media marketing, digital marketing, and how that combined with my background in filmmaking and storytelling, and how I could better, tell better stories and work with clients. And went on to doing some content producing, digital marketing for television. And just over the years, I've been working with different clients. And then at one point, I decided, why not start my own business? And so I did. And so one of my side gigs is at owning my own business. I know that's weird because you don't aside own a business, but right now I kind of do because I freelance. So I get bounced between running the business and actually being a freelancer. That's a really strange line I walk.
Well, there's a lot of debate, particularly for people who are starting their first business, about whether you should, if you're an employee and you're thinking about being an entrepreneur and starting your own business, should you start it full time? Should you start it on the side and at some point it becomes your full time thing? And also, I would say that anyone who is an entrepreneur always has side businesses, because most people who are entrepreneurs have tons of ideas, and there are always things that they're thinking about trying to do or trying to take their business in a new direction. So are those side businesses or not? I think there's a lot of similarity.
Yeah, I would agree, because I've noticed I did run my business solely by itself for about a year and a half, and I found that it really stressed me out, and I know that, you know, you're, as a small business owner, that's just what you're going to be. But part of the thing was, is I didn't have enough capital in the bank, and when I started, and I feel that that put me at a little bit of a disadvantage because I didn't go out seeking funding. I had a couple of clients in my back pocket when I left my last full-time job. And I was doing this on the side while I was doing that full-time job. And I said, okay, well, now maybe I can make that leap. And what happened was, you know, everything was running really smoothly for a while. And then one client, you know, dropped off. And that was it. And then it became really difficult to try to find another client. And then all I could find were small clients that didn't meet the nut that client had, you know, had afforded me. So then I got to thinking, okay, well, now what do I do? Do I go back to finding a full-time job? Do I go back to consulting? You know, what am I doing? Luckily, one of my clients, there was one of my bigger clients, did come to me, and they said, you know, we'd like to bring you on full time right now, you know, as a contractor, and with the opportunity that possibly you'll go, you know, you'll become an employee. And so I said, you know what, that's going to be the answer to my prayers. I could continue to run my other clients on the side, which I did. But what it did is it gave me like a little bit of a cushion. And though I didn't end up full time with them, I ended up going then to another full time consulting job. And so right now I still run the business on the side, but then also, you know, I'm a full time consultant, and that kind of gives me like that really good balance in both worlds. So at some point, and it's also given me a lot of confidence in myself. My confidence definitely has been building over the past 2 years, because with each different job, I have an elevated title. I have elevated responsibilities, and it gives me the opportunity to see the business running in a different businesses running differently, and which also gives me like the chance to say, okay, well, this is how I can run my business better. This is when I'm ready to go back to running my business, because I know that at some point I will. But right now I'm learning more and more and more, and that is giving me just a lot of peace of mind, so to speak.
It is stressful to run your own business.
Yeah.
And I don't think it makes that much difference how big or how small the business is.
No, it's true. I tried to run it. I thought to myself for a very long time that I can't do this. You know, I don't know how to do this. But I've seen now how different businesses run, big and small, and I realize that it really just comes down to making smarter decisions and having capital behind you before you kind of, you know, make a bigger leap, or having something you can put up as collateral. You know, without owning anything, that was another problem I had. It was not like I could take a lien on my home to back the business, nor did I have a partner whom I could lean on. So there are certain things that I definitely would want in place, I think, you know, when I'm ready to go back to, you know, to running the business full time again, so that there is some sort of stability on the back end. I'm not going to lose my shirt if the business fails.
It's true that having capital or some credit can give you a cushion or some breathing room to deal with the unexpected, or to give you a little more space to do some planning and some more methodical execution of your plans. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, there are people who, the fact that they have either declared bankruptcy or gone broke forces them to take some actions that they probably wouldn't take otherwise. And I've had people on the show who've talked about these sort of terrible circumstances that they found themselves in that they've managed to turn into something new and different and unexpected.
So
I wonder if we could actually talk a little bit about the content of the work that you do around storytelling and how you see the storytelling now that you've spent a lot of time on the business side of things, how you see storytelling fitting into what businesses need to do to be successful?
That's a tricky question because it's a little bit different for everybody. It really depends on your business. I think businesses need to be honest first and foremost. I'll do examples. So for instance, working with a startup, one of my last technology startups I worked with actually worked in the entertainment industry, but they created the technology for entertainment purposes. And what we had to do is we had to find the story of the business. And I can't tell you how difficult that was. It was a lot of sessions going back and forth to the drawing board because they would change direction every other day. It would be one day we do this thing, one day we do that thing. And they didn't have a clear story. So it was very, very difficult to market them, to create a community around them, to get, it wasn't even so much community as we were looking for investors. So how do you get investors interested in you? It's tell a cohesive story. And here I am, I'm writing the marketing materials for them. Well, how do I write the marketing materials when I don't know what the story is? So that story, so that did teach me that when you're working with a client is to make sure that they know their story down pat. To know, their origin story, because that is something that people will always ask. To know what your direction is, who you want to reach, and how do you engage your listeners? How do you engage your investors, or how do you engage people? And that's what the story is who are you? And if you don't know who you are, you're not going to land, a client. You're not going to get funded. You're not going to get, you're not going to get the business. So that is something that we, and I work on very adamantly with my clients is, okay, well, what story are we telling? And, who are you? And you can't change the story, every 5 minutes. You have to find a story and stick with it.
Jen, why do you think it's hard for some people to uncover their story?
Basically, for the same reason you touched on earlier, is that I find that, especially with entrepreneurs and business owners, your mind is going in a million different places, and you want to be everything to everybody. And it's very hard for people to focus, especially when you do own a business or you do have a property or a product. You want your audience to be as big as possible, but that's not always the best solution. I work a lot with filmmakers, and the very, very first thing I ask my filmmakers when I sit down with them is, who is your audience? And 9 times out of 10, they don't know. And so that becomes the very first part of my job when I work with entertainment properties, is determining who the audience is. Because then essentially what direction your story is going in. And you know how you're going to tell it because you know who the audience is. So your audience are children. Your story will be a very different type of story than if, say, your audience are, 45 to 65 year old women. It will have different words. It will have different action verbs. It will have a different tone. It will have a different feel altogether. So in determining the story, you determine first and foremost your audience. And again, that's also true with a startup. It's true with a small business. It's true with a technology company. Is who is going to buy my product? Who is going to invest in me? And you have to know that person first. And a lot of times, either they don't do their research, or they think everybody is going to be interested in their product because it's just that great, or their company because everybody wants the next new thing. And they may be right, but they really have to know, have a keen sense of who it is they want to reach out to. And that, I think, is the biggest challenge for most people.
Yeah, well, for marketing purposes, it seems somewhat counterintuitive to most people, but the narrower your audience is, the more penetration of the market you're going to achieve.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
Do you find that sometimes well-established and mature businesses have trouble understanding their audience, who their audience is, or maybe the audience has shifted and they don't realize it?
All the time, yes. They think that their audience is still, 25 to 40-year-old men, and it's now, changed to 14 to 17-year-old women. So it's, yes, I've seen that. I see that very much in the film industry now, especially with the studios. They're making these films for this, these target demographics that they think are selling, and they're not, because those are not the demographics that are buying the tickets. Those are not the demographics that are coming to see the movies anymore. I mean, as we all know, Hollywood has a big problem with ticket sales. And that's because they're not doing their market research. They're throwing money down a well, and they don't see the bigger picture anymore. They think that if they just keep doing it the old way, that things will change. And they don't. They stay the same. And it has become a bigger and bigger issue. And that's part of what we do, what I do with the company I work with now, with my company, is a try to pull them back a little bit and let them see the bigger picture by providing analytics and making very tailored reports that tell a story, that tell, okay, so this is who you thought was your demographic, but here in reality, these are the people who saw this, or these are the people, who are buying the tickets. And how do we then shift the story that we're telling online to match this demographic?
Right. So you can use analytics to try to understand who your audience is and test out different stories?
Yes. Yes, that is one of the biggest reasons for analytics, is to just see that you're on track in terms of the audience that you're targeting. And if the audience you're targeting are not the ones that are engaging with your content, or not the ones that are buying your product, or not the ones that are talking about you, then you need to figure out why, and figure out the ones who are.
Jen, would you be willing to share an example of a success that has happened as a result of unearthing someone's story where they just couldn't do it on their own?
Yeah, try to think of a good concise one that's not let's see. We could Yeah, so I worked for a television station, local station, a few years ago. I was actually a full-time employee. Mm-hmm. And when I was brought on board, there was no social media presence at all. None. They were doing call-ins the old-fashioned way, where people, if you wanted to interact with the show, you actually had to make a phone call. If you, wanted to find out anything about the programming or the time, it was all on air. So I came on board and built up their social media profiles from nothing. I worked on their digital marketing strategy. Started doing analytics to show where our audience was and how to reach them. In a matter of about 6 months, we saw a massive uptick in interaction with the show. Now we still had a call-in number, but we also had people who were able to send us messages on social media. And so we started a segment on the show where we could read responses to daily questions. We could read reactions live on air. We did live tweets during, it was a political news show, so during the elections we did live tweeting. And engagement went up and audience viewership increased. And I was able to prove to them using these numbers, you know, the, like the interaction and everything, that, well, this is your audience. You know, they are watching, and you gave them a call and response, and, you know, watch how you've increased. Before, they had no idea who was watching the show, really. I mean, they knew, they kind of knew, but there was no hard evidence of it. And by actually giving them the numbers and showing the demographic, I could show them exactly where the audience was, what time they tuned in, if they were tuning in live, if they were tuning in online, when they were engaging, when their biggest engagement was. So it was a massive, oh, wow, moment for them.
And how do they feel when they got this information?
Those that understood it were very ecstatic. So those that didn't get it, there, you can lead a horse to water, you can't make them drink. So there were still some people that thought that traditional was the way to go and that digital was a passing fad. Even though I showed them the numbers, it didn't stick.
So along those lines, what do you think prevents people from making the changes they need for their companies to thrive?
I think for some people, it's age. I have a much harder time with older clients than I do with younger clients, of course. Unless they're technologically savvy.
Mm-hmm.
I think another one is some people think that they can do it better and they can do it cheaper by themselves. And they make a lot of mistakes because marketing is not their full-time job, and so they don't understand it. They think that any person can do marketing. And then there are those that know they need it, know that it's something that it's a good investment, but are just afraid to take the leap because they either really don't have the money and they're afraid that it's going to backfire on them.
Interesting. Jen, turning to yourself, who have been some of the influencers that have been pivotal for you in your career?
The first one's probably Vlad Nikolic, who was a professor at the New School where I did my graduate degree. He was actually the one that put me on the path of transmedia. He made me the transmedia producer on his film. And he had every bit of faith in me. And he basically saw in me this storyteller that also had an eye for marketing and knew how to work with people. And he really put me on this path. He gave me a lot of confidence. He told me that there's nothing I can't do. He's made a number of films since, and I've worked on a couple of them with him, doing these, you know, as side projects. And with each one, we've, you know, done something completely different because, hey, why not? He's had every bit of faith in me, and for that, I couldn't be more grateful. So yeah, he was really the first one who got me on this, and then through him, I met a number of other people in the transmedia community. Henry Jenkins, who wrote a book that I read back when I was working with Lad called Convergence Culture. And it was all about the convergence of technology and media and storytelling and how that helped to solidify a lot of the things that I had going on in my head where I was trying to figure out how to work with technology and story and media and marketing and how does this, you know, really all tie together. And Henry did it very concisely. And then I've had a few other great mentors in my, you know, and as I've come through, people that own their own businesses, Michael Minello, who owns Campfire NYC, they've done some incredible immersive marketing experiences. And a dear friend of mine who just passed, Brian Clark, who had GMD Studios. And he was an experienced designer. And basically what that was making people do things to experience a project, a technology, a platform, and making them really engage to learn more or to become more aware of what they are doing. So I count myself very lucky. I've had a lot of mentors. I've had a lot of people who have helped me get to where I am and have been very, very kind with their time.
It's important to have people who can guide you, and also important, as you said with Vlad, people who can recognize things in yourself that you may not be ready to see, and that can really catapult you forward.
Yeah, I hope that I'm doing that now with my students. I firmly believe in paying it forward, and so I've been giving my students opportunities at internships with me or the companies I'm working with, or been trying to find them internships, and you know, try my best to be a mentor to help them get to the next stage in their professional careers.
So along the lines of either helping or watching other people, who do you know who's currently doing remarkable work?
Let's see, who's working? Lance Weiler. Lance has always done some amazing work, and he never ceases to amaze. He works with Columbia. Right now he's doing a project called Sherlock Holmes and the Internet of Things. Also, the guys over at Campfire are doing some amazing work. Mike Minello, Steve Colson, Jeremiah Rosen, they always do fabulous work. It's non-traditional marketing. Let's see, who else do I know that's doing some cool stuff? Caitlin Burns. She's a freelancer, but she's working on she's starting her own business. So those are just a few that I can think of off the top of my head.
It sounds great. So turning back to you, what are you working on now? What exciting things do we have to look forward to?
Well, right now I'm consulting for a company called Brigade Marketing, where I am social media supervisor on a number of entertainment projects that we're working on. So I work with Universal, Lionsgate, Netflix. We're doing primarily film and television shows. But as for my own stuff, goodness, what do I have going? a little bit in a lull right now. I'm working softly on a project of my own. It's going to be a transmedia project. I'm focusing it on Washington Irving, who was a storyteller, because I live in the town of Irvington, which is founded by Washington Irving. Well, it's named after him because he lived here. It was actually South Tarrytown. And I'm fascinated by a marketing campaign that he did for a book that he wrote, And it's, so I want to tie something into to the river towns where I live. But we'll see where that comes. That's finding time right now to do it. But also probably getting my business, excuse me, getting my business back off the ground again at some point.
Well, you know, interesting opportunities often come in unexpected ways.
They do. They do. I mean, I'm doing lots of little things. The other thing that I am working on, which is going well, is Story Forward. I host events monthly. We'll be doing one next month. We're doing workshops and panels and classes at Adorama on 18th and 5th. And each month we'll be doing a different event. This next month will be a workshop on storytelling taught by a gentleman who worked with Marvel Comics. So that should be a lot of fun. And then I think in October we're doing a panel on storytelling and transmedia and what storytelling means today, and if it's changed or if it's still the same. So we're lining up events for that, and that's something that I hope will be a lot more cohesive by the end of the year. We've talked about at some point maybe doing a conference. My partner's out in LA. They've been established for a while. They have a podcast of their own, which I now contribute to, and they have a series of live events that they're doing as well. So I'll be working on those.
Sounds great. Jen, how can listeners learn more about you?
They can follow me on Twitter at JLBHART. So it's JLB Hart without the E. Or they can check out my website, which is JLBHartMedia.com. Again, it's Hart without the E. Those are the two best places to find me. Or you can go to LinkedIn and check out my profile. It's Jen Beagle. And I'm sure that my name is listed below in the credits.
Sounds good. Well, Jen, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today on Smashing the Plateau. My guest today has been digital marketer Jen Beagle. Thank you again, Jen, for joining us.
Thank you, David.
You've been listening to Smashing the Plateau, the podcast produced by 10 Strategic Partners. Be sure to visit our website at smashingtheplateau.com and join our email list to hear many more great interviews like this one. And if you like what you heard, please leave us a review on iTunes by going to smashingtheplateau.com/iTunes. I'm your host, David Schreiner-Kahn, and we'll be talking again soon.